End times. She's talked about it, and we'll chat with her about it as well. Ann Druffel, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Ann Druffel. Ann, let's get your take. End times as well. You wrote a book. You've done some work, Standing in God's Light, you called, in End Times. What's your take on end times?
Well, my take on end times, I didn't have a take on it until my co-author, Armin Marcotte, who was a remarkable, a famous clairvoyant, suggested in the 1990s that we write a book together about his the information he was receiving mentally from what he called his spiritual guides about end times coming closer. And so that's where I began to get the interest that I have today in end times. But I'd like to, you know, point out that Armin Marcotte predicted a hopeful situation regarding what we call end times, that the world would survive and go on in a more in a peaceful, evolved sense.
Well, some people have predicted that. I hope he is too. Do you believe we are in it now?
From Armin's precise predictions, I tend to believe, I won't say hypothesize, that we are likely in end times as he described them. You see, he said one of his, he gave 9 readings during the 1990s, and I transcribed them, you know, and worked from them.
Okay.
And what he said, and this is a quote, he said, there will be a worldwide war perpetrated by terrorists in the grip of evil. And, of course, you know, that coming out in the mid-1990s did not mean as much as it does now.
That's so amazing. And that was part of his readings, you say?
Yes, that is a precise a quotation from one of his readings. A worldwide war perpetrated by terrorists in the grip of evil. And when I first read that, you know, and transcribed this, working on the book with him, I thought, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But I soon found out.
What does the chronology, what's the timetable here, Anne? I mean, when you say we're in it, but how long will we be in it?
Armand Marcotte never was able to give precise time. He said that end times might come in 2012. It might come before. It might come shortly after 2008. He had specific specific quotes like that.
Did he believe end times were tied into the Mayan calendar end date of 2012?
He said possibly.
Huh.
That's one of the quotes in the book.
Well, that would change everyone's assumption of solar, eruption and confusion and things like that. That's an interesting twist to it.
Yes, it would be an interesting twist. I was trying to find his precise quote, but...
Can you eventually when you find it, can you tie in end times to, you know, the book of Revelation, the apocalypse, and Antichrist? I mean, does he go that far to tie all this in?
Oh, well, yes. Armin and I are both Catholics. He was a Catholic. He died in 1999. Leaving me to finish the book. But he said, you know,
how far had
Dan,
you?
And I'll be come back from the other side to help you.
I'll help you out, right.
Which he did.
it sounds like there's another story here.
Oh, yes. What was the question? I'm sorry.
Well, was it all tied into, you know, the apocalypse, the Antichrist, everything that we've read in the book of Revelation? Is that what you believe end times to be? And is that what we're leading into?
Because Armin and I were both Catholics, we went according to the Catholic Bible, but also went into other Bibles and the other visionary sources that are not even related to Christianity. So the book is a combination of predictions of end times by many sources. It is not specifically just what our religion said.
Sure. And you said the Catholic Bible, and I'm sure you meant the Christian Bible.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, the Christian Bible, there are a little bit different versions of the Christian Bible.
Sure.
And the Catholic Bible is slightly different in some of the verbiage.
Who might be, did he predict who the Antichrist is or will be?
Armand never got around to predicting specifically who the Antichrist was, but he described him, you see. And so it was up to me to research his nine transcripts. And I came to the conclusion that the description of the Antichrist as described in the Bible might well be the United Nations. In other words,
as a whole, the United Nations
of humans, rather than one human man,
and they would be then in total the Antichrist.
They would be perpetrating the events that are described in the Bible. In other words, there would be a worldwide chaos. The suggestion of a one world order, a suggestion of a God that was not the God that we know of, you know, in heaven. And of course, the United Nations has all these strange things that they're trying to get into effect, including a world church, which would not be, you know, it would incorporate little tiny bits of all the religions of the world, but that the UN itself would be the God of the world church.
Interesting.
That's described, the process is described in the book.
Yet he believes that we're going to be okay.
Yes. In his transcripts, he specified that it would be up to people who perceived that end times were most probably here to fight against the chaos that end times would cause all over the world, and that there would be groups of people forming, you see, who would fight various aspects of the chaos of end times.
Bumps along the road here, Ann?
Bumps along the road?
Yeah. It's not going to be an easy haul, is it?
No, it hasn't been so far, because there are groups described in the Standing in God's Light in End Times that are specific, like the Fatima Center, for example. This is a Catholic idea, of course, and
right.
I don't want to, indicate that I have only Catholic ideas, but there was a tremendous miracle that occurred in Fatima, Portugal, of which your listeners may be aware, in 1917, in which what appeared to be the Virgin Mary appeared to three little shepherds and requested that that Russia specifically be consecrated to her Immaculate Heart by the Pope, together with all the bishops of the world, and that once this consecration was done, there would be a period of peace given to the world. Now, you know, what we need now is a period of peace, but this consecration has never been done by the Vatican. And that is described in one of the chapters in Standing in God's Light, because this is one of the groups that people can join. That you don't have to be Catholic to join the Fatima Center. And in fact, anybody can access Fatima.org on their computers and ask for free literature about this so-called request of Mary for peace in the world.
You know, you believe in your theories that these interdimensional beings that we've been talking about tonight might have something to do with this.
Yes, there's a few pages in the book which discuss the fact that at least one Muslim cleric, who at that time was highly regarded, specified that the Muslims who were in Afghanistan and the Taliban that we were fighting. This was in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
That they were being influenced by evil jinns to perpetrate their evil deeds. And this cleric said that the Muslims in the United States, for example, were good people, that they were not influenced, but that the insurgents, they call them now, it's a very mild term, in the Middle East are influenced by evil jinns, the ones who actually blow themselves up and kill their own people as well as Westerners.
That's interesting theory, Anne.
It's an interesting theory. It was specified on 60 Minutes 2 in 2002. This journalist from CBS, his name was George Kreil, was looking for Daniel Pearl at that time, because
right.
at that time we did not know that Daniel Pearl had been killed. And he found this journalist whom he had been told might lead him to Daniel Pearl. And this Muslim academic that George Kreil interviewed specified about the jinns being the cause of the terrible barbaric murders in this what has become a worldwide war.
Well, are these jinns devils? Because they sound evil to me, Anne.
These jinns are the same kind of creature that I've described in How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And when you say devils, the Quran and other academics, down through the century in other countries, have specified that this form of creation the Muslims call jinns were created between the angels and mankind. They are a separate form of creation. They do not live in Earth space time. They live in what is called an altered realm in and under our Earth. You might call that another dimension or another plane.
They're not reptilians. We're not talking about reptilian creatures, are we?
That's a question that I cannot answer because I'm not involved in, reptiles and these other say 57 types of creatures that abduct human beings. Is it now 57?
Well, and it keeps growing, it seems. Yeah.
Some researchers know these now in Europe they're called incubi, and they are called demons in Europe. But the word demons does not mean devils like it does in the United States. We say that devils are demons, but the demons actually are the third order of creation that the Muslims call jinns and the Irish call the wee folk.
Well, have you used remote viewing at all to look into the future to see what happens at the end of all of this?
I'm not a remote viewer as such. I have not used I've not used other remote viewers that I know of.
Not on this.
That. It would be very interesting to do that, but that would be a whole research project I haven't had time to take on.
I wonder what they would see. Yeah.
I'm sure if you access the internet, you can find information by that. If you access the remote viewers that are highly regarded, and the organizations that are highly regarded, like Stephen Schwartz, his Mobius Society.
Yes.
You might find very interesting information on there. I know that up until a few years ago, he was using remote viewers in specific projects. And I know, too, that there have been many projects by other researchers, objective, scientifically oriented researchers, who have looked into the future with remote viewers.
Of everything you've investigated, I mean, the work you've done on McDonald, the work on alien abductions, the work on end times, and much more, is there an area that you particularly find the most fascinating?
An area of research?
That you've done that is just one of your mind-bogglers that continue to even have you go, my gosh, I didn't believe that when I started.
Well, there's one research project that has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight.
What's that?
I've been on since 1978.
What is that?
I'm looking for the lost grave of Robert Emmett, who was a very famous Irish patriot who conducted the rebellion of 1803 and was executed by the English, who at that time were in charge of all of Ireland.
Why do you want to find his lost grave?
Because according to what he said before he died, and according to all the legends in Ireland and the belief of people in Ireland, that once the grave is found, Ireland will be free. In other words, it will take its place among the nations of the earth. And to the Irish that I contact every few years when I go over there, that means that the North will be joined to the South, either independently as provinces or in some other way that is not understood, but that the North will be free of England just as the South is now. And this is what Robert Emmett was trying to
do. And so far at this point, nobody can find his grave, huh?
No. He seems to be in different places. How saints and things like that, their bones are separated.
Yes, exactly. Spread all over the place.
It seems that perhaps that this is what has happened to the bones of Robert Emmett, and that my information, I'm using psychic archaeology, remote viewing, for this project.
Who's the remote viewer?
Now that he is in three places in Ireland.
Can you say who the remote viewer is? Would we know him or her?
Oh, well, I worked with the Mobius Society for years with Stephen Schwartz.
Okay,
I was a consultant and a researcher with the Mobius Society during the early 90s.
Who's the specific remote viewer? Do you know?
Oh, I have 81 remote viewers.
They're all working on this project?
Well, they have since 1978. I have had remote
81 viewers. Of them?
Pardon?
81 of them? Are they getting close?
I believe I am close, yes, because about 50% of my entire information from 81 fine clairvoyants and remote viewers indicates a particular place outside Dublin that I won't specify over the air, but I'm trying now to get the permission of the local folks there to have a subsurface radar survey made from an aerial source.
That's fascinating. Stay with us. We're going to take some of your Fast Blast questions next with Ann Druffel. We're going to take Fast Blast questions this half hour with Ann Druffel. Her website, by the way, AnnDruffel.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The next hour, we'll flip the switch and take your real phone calls. I do want to ask her about a few more UFO-related questions and issues, and then we'll go to the Fast Blast next on Coast to Coast AM. Alan, and you're aware of our good friend, Dr. Roger Lear.
Yes, of course.
Matter of fact, he stands above everyone when it comes to these implants and what they may be. And I wish Dr. J. Allen Hynek were still alive to be able to try to figure out this one, too. But what is your take on the so-called retrieving of these implants or whatever they are?
Well, I know that Dr. Lear does fine work, and that the retrievals of these so-called implants is done in a scientific manner. The thing where I disagree with Dr. Lear is that these implants that he recovers from the bodies of abductees, experiencers, call them what you want, are samples of alien technology put in by physical occupants from physical UFOs. This is where I disagree. There is an alternate theory there.
Okay, what is that?
That was given to me by Bertolt Eric Schwarz, who is a famous parapsychologist, ufologist, and psychiatrist. He hypothesizes that these implants that are recovered from their bodies are what are called apports. Apports are physical objects that appear during so-called seances and other parapsychological happenings, or in times of intense emotion. Apports, they can appear as if from another dimension and become physical in our space-time, they last. Now, the so-called implants that Dr. Lear has recovered have no similarity to any kind of technology that we would even think of as something that could give information about the person that is carrying it around in his or her body.
Well, I've seen one of the objects up front. I witnessed one of his operations a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as they tried to grab it, the thing moved in the woman's cheek. It was really bizarre. I don't know what they are, Ann. And I don't think Roger does either.
His theory, I believe, it's a rather firm theory, isn't it, that they are technological devices implanted into abductees so that these physical occupants, so-called, of physical UFOs can follow the movements of the person.
But just a theory.
It's a theory. I think he has a rather firm theory about that. I don't have theories, unless I have scientific proof of something. I will go into tentative hypothesis and then make it firmer and firmer as the empirical evidence becomes available. This is the way that Jim McDonald worked, Dr. McDonald. But I know there are apports because Dr. Schwarz, Dr. Bert Schwarz, has many, many examples of apports that have apparently appeared out of another dimension into our space-time.
Now, I'm getting some fast blasts. These are my computer messages, and from people who want you to elaborate a little bit more on the jinn, this Middle Eastern phraseology for these creatures. Some people say they think they may be fallen angels.
Well, of course, fallen angels are called devils.
Mm-hmm.
In our society, in our Western society, or the United States, they're also called demons. But these are all fallen angels, which is the first order of creation that God created according to the Bible. But even though they have fallen out of grace from God, they are still angels, you see.
Sure.
Now the jinns and the so-called fairy folk, the wee folk, the Boonians, the incubi, are the second order of creation created, and they are different from angels, completely different from angels, and then of course there's the human beings, which are different from both.
That's an interesting theory.
I hope I answered the question of the listener.
Well, I'm sure you did. And next hour, we're going to have many more lining up for you when it comes to this. You know, when you started doing this kind of work, did you ever realize that it would evolve into all these other facets?
No.
Probably not.
No. Absolutely no. In 1973, when the abduction report started to flood in to the researchers all around the country, we accepted that as part of the UFO phenomenon as such. But then gradually, you know, as we studied the stories of the abductees and their experiences, I finally got what I considered to be considerable evidence that they were not part of the physical UFO phenomenon, the actual physical craft that fly around in our skies and are chased by jet pilots, caught on radar, you see. It's a different phenomenon, a parapsychological phenomenon,
yep.
Or perhaps it's caused by some part of the electromagnetic field that is still considered physical in our world, but not perceptible to us.
Mona Campbell from New Orleans wants to know more about the global violence caused by these creatures. Your theory on that?
Well, it's not a theory. You know, the terrorists have compounds in the United States too, in spite
of
what this Muslim cleric told George Crowell in 2002, and they have tried many times to commit barbaric acts here, but have been stopped by the government, thank God, except for 2001, of course, for 9/11.
Well, why would these creatures, get involved in this?
This is a hypothesis presented by the Muslim cleric that I describe in the book. I describe this long interview that he gave to the CBS journalist. And it's what I had it here.
Well, that's all
talk
right.
About.
What do you mean? Are they creating this, or are they the terrorists?
Well, to my mind, I don't think we really know what's going on. But as far as I've researched, there is a feeling or a belief among some Muslims that the war on infidels has to be perpetrated by the end of the world. In other words, all of other religions other than Islam has to be completely wiped off the map.
Okay, but I still don't understand the tie-in with these so-called dimensional creatures.
Yes, this comes from the 60 Minutes 2 interview by George Crowell with what was considered at the time to be a very reputable Muslim cleric in Pakistan. And he was the one that specified to George Crowell that the war on terror, which was then raging in Afghanistan,
right.
Was being perpetrated by terrorists who were under the influence of evil jinns, you see. He specified this, that there are several pages in my book which give the information that this Muslim cleric was giving to the CBS journalists.
So he's basically saying that these terrorists are evil because of these interdimensional creatures.
Yes, that they are influenced by the evil jinns to believe that if they can kill Westerners and non-Islamics, that they will be rewarded, even if they blow themselves up doing it, that they will be rewarded with 72 virgins in the afterlife.
Would these interdimensional creatures also affect serial killers and other people? Anything that perpetrates evil?
He did not specify that, but I've come upon some information in my research that perhaps the jinns, or this interdimensional form of creation, the, you know, that's both good and bad, does do other types of evil around the world. Some people think that serial killers are influenced by devils, you know, fallen angels, but it isn't unreasonable to think that they are influenced by evil jinns. This is a new idea that's come to me the last few weeks. But you see, this Muslim cleric in Pakistan compared the evil jinns, which he said were influencing and advancing the war on terror, with the creatures, he called them, in the American TV series The X-Files. And there was no doubt that he was saying that the same paraphysical phenomenon that he said was responsible for influencing the war on terror was also the same phenomenon that is in the minds of so many people also posing as UFO alien abductors.
That's an incredible series of events there, Anne.
Yes, it's detailed.
That's bizarre.
The reference to the specific transcript that people can write for to CBS is also given there.
Give us a few moments here to talk about Dr. Jacques Vallée before we go to phone calls at the top of the hour. Has he basically gotten out of the field? I mean, he was one of along with Hynek and others, this guy was on top of the world in the field of ufology. He fell off the map. Now, some people say he's just starting to go to these conferences again. What happened to him? And he wrote your foreword to your book, Firestorm.
I know. It was wonderful working with him. Throughout the last maybe 10 years, Jacques Vallée will be very intensely researching a particular part or several parts of the UFO phenomenon. And then he will become discouraged because it's so difficult to get any firm conclusion onto anything about what UFOs really are. So he leaves the field for about 2 years. Is the last 10 years. Then he comes back, you know, researching again, becomes discouraged, leaves the field for about 2 years. This is what happens with Jacques Vallée.
Yeah, you know, the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, based on Dr. J. Allen Hynek's book, but also kind of keyed in on Jacques Vallée. The French guy who was in that movie was basically his character.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then I mean, there was just so much knowledge there. And then when he wrote Messengers of Deception, he wrote a few others. I think he wrote Passport to Magonia.
Magonia, yes.
And then he just kind of like disappeared.
Well, he came back, for a couple of years, and then he became very discouraged with the same thing I perceive in the field, the chaos, in the UFO field. When I was speaking with him, he was writing the foreword for Firestorm. It just went out of my head. The thing was, he was trying to explain to me. I am not too technical.
Well, and he also changed his views. He changed his views that these were physical UFOs, as you have said earlier, to dimensional beings.
When he was talking with me at length about this, he had an idea that perhaps UFOs and the creatures associated with them were part of what we call the electromagnetic spectrum, all of which is physical. You see, even infrared is physical in our space-time. But imperceptible, many, many parts of the electromagnetic spectrum, which are part of our physical universe, are not perceptible even with, some of our best equipment.
You think Vallée will come back?
Oh, yes, he will.
Stronger than ever, maybe?
Oh, well, I hope so. Yes. He's a marvelous man.
I sometimes wonder if he found something so frightening, he decided just to get out of this and not say anything.
I don't think Jacques Vallée would be frightened. He was like a Jim McDonald. He understood Jim McDonald better than Hynek did.
And if he uncovered something, you think he'd share it with us?
I would hope so. He certainly wouldn't be frightened out of the field.
Right.
He would not be frightened.
By anybody?
As far as I do know Jacques Vallée, I don't think anything would frighten him.
Well,
I may be wrong.
Well,
but it
was just an abrupt disappearance. That's all.
He becomes discouraged. The field is
frustrated.
Is very. He becomes discouraged because of the chaos in the field, and the fact that it is so hard to obtain documented proof of what UFOs actually are. Maybe they're even beyond documented proof.
How did you get to know him?
Pardon?
How did you get to know him?
Well, when I was writing Firestorm, I contacted him and asked if by any chance he would like to write the foreword to it, because there's a lot of information about Jacques Vallée's work with J. Allen Hynek in Firestorm. And he very kindly wrote the most magnificent foreword for it. Because he respected not only J. Allen Hynek, but Jim McDonald, too.
Well, let me tell you, you have had an opportunity to write about and know some heavy hitters in this field. That's got to be special to you.
Well, I've been very, very blessed, I think. Sometimes, you know, you feel that the work that's given to you is given to you by God to do in this life.
Yeah.
That's what I feel about the work that's given to me to do.
What happens when the next generation of investigators, the Stanton Friedmans, the Kevin Randalls, the Timothy Good, those people, when they're gone, what's left?
Oh, the younger ones are coming up.
Are they?
Oh, yes. I work with many younger researchers who are objective, scientifically oriented people, scientists too, some of them. There will be people to take our places.
I hope so.
Oh, yes.
I know.
Know that, George. Yes.
All right. Well, that's a good feeling, because I know that in the Bigfoot field, for example. I mean, we need more investigators, because the old guys are simply fading away. Stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines next. Your questions with Ann Druffel. If you've got a question about Dr. James McDonald, he was a heavy hitter. Alien abductions, her hypothesis, and also her thoughts on end times. This is your time. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.